Hello and welcome to Radio Inqilab, a podcast focused on change makers who are working to educate, resolve, and change the complex systems within which we live. Radio Inqilab aims to bring voices to the forefront who have traditional as well as modern solutions for our planet, can share knowledge on how we take decisive action and live in harmony with each other and Mother Earth. In this time of chaos, disinformation, and negativity, Radio Inqilab seeks to focus on ideas that work and the positive impact they can have. My name is Rupande Mehta, and I come to you from Lenape Land in New Jersey. This is a recording of a webinar that took place with Madeline Hoffman on September 4th, 2024. Madeline Hoffman was the director of the Grassroots Environmental Organization in New Jersey from 1983 to 1998. She worked with over 200 citizens groups from every part of New Jersey on issues of toxic chemical pollution. She then was the director of New Jersey Peace Action from 2000 to 2018. Madeline Hoffman holds a BA cum laude from Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, obtained in 78, and a master's in public administration from Rutgers University, obtained in 1981. Hoffman teaches US government, ethics, environmental studies, and public speaking while coaching ESL students in reading and writing. She was Ralph Nader's vice presidential running mate for New Jersey in 1996. Together, they received over 31,000 votes. Hoffman was a New Jersey Green Party's candidate for governor in 1997. In 2018, she returned to electoral politics and ran against Senator Bob Menendez. In 2020, she ran against Senator Booker, receiving almost 40,000 votes. In 2021, she ran for governor of New Jersey against the incumbent governor, Phil Murphy. Madeline Hoffman is currently the chair of the Green Party New Jersey's Policy Committee.
I thank Group A and others for holding this event for District 11 for Palestine, correct?
That is correct.
And I am really grateful for the opportunity to share my knowledge and experiences, I would say, from, as you mentioned in the introduction, from 1996 through to the present day. And I did learn a lot in 1996, being the vice presidential running mate of Ralph Nader's here in New Jersey. And that's a whole story in and of itself that we don't have time to go into. But what I took from that, as much as anything, was what Ralph Nader said in 1996 about voting for the lesser of two evils. He said then, that voting for the lesser of two evils is still voting for evil. And basically, he said the evil will get greater and greater, and the lesser will become lesser and lesser, meaning the quality of our candidates, of people we have a choice to vote for in either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. They're still going to be evil, and they're not going to be the kinds of candidates we want at the end of the day. So I remember that was 1996, and I remember in 2016 I wasn't involved with the Green Party at the time, as I had taken a good 20 years off to be an activist, a community activist, and I couldn't associate myself with any particular political party. It would have, gone against the rules of nonprofits. And in 2016, I'm watching as Hillary Clinton is running against Donald Trump. Okay, and they were saying, the news was saying that these were the two least popular candidates ever recorded in the history of US elections, presidential elections. And then that quote of Ralph Nader came back to me, just jumped back into my head. Lesser of two evils, still evil, and the lesser becomes the evil becomes greater and greater, and the quality of the candidates gets lower and lower. That was 2016. That was 20 years later. Fast forward, we're almost 30 years later, and we are facing a choice this election between now Kamala Harris and Donald Trump again. And if it hadn't been that, it would have been an instant replay of the 2020 presidential elections, and we would have had Biden and Trump. We would have had, in my mind, a war criminal versus a felon, a convicted felon. What are we talking about? Lesser of two evils here. Now add Kamala Harris. And I would have to say that as a candidate, or as the vice president rather, for the last 3 plus years, going on 4, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden together promulgated certain policies and made sure they happened. And I will refer to Chris Hedges in one of his most recent articles about genocide, because that's one of the titles we used for this talk. Is the genocide a red line for you? And for me, it is absolutely a red line. And for Chris Hedges, it is absolutely a red line. He said it's a moral issue. It's not an issue, they're all moral issues to one extent or another, but say taxes for the wealth, taxes on the wealthy, or free lunches in schools. These are all issues. They all have a moral component, but they're not like saying, like a genocide. And what I can't get over, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the politics of genocide, as well as the Green Party politics and the Democrats and the Democrats and Republicans and how the Green Party sees that. But there are people, and in 2018, when I ran against Senator Menendez, I was told then that the only ethical choice for US Senate that year was a vote for Senator Menendez, because if people didn't vote for Senator Menendez, the Republican would win. Now, we've seen what happened to Senator Menendez over the last 8 years, have we not? Or 7 years, to be precise. We've seen, or 6 years, 6 years during what has been his term. Ethical and Bob Menendez don't really go in the same sentence, in my opinion. Okay, so to me, we're looking at something similar here. We're looking at, and at that point, not only did people say he was the only ethical choice, but people said he's not the perfect candidate. I'm going to hold my nose and I'm going to vote for him. And others were saying things like, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. In other words, I was being told that having an agenda, a platform that covers housing and healthcare and the real Green New Deal and no more war and US out of Latin America and many other issues like this, those issues, my disagreement with Robert Menendez on those issues was trivial. I said, because you're never going to find the perfect candidate. As I said, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. Well, this year, before the elections really got underway, in October of 2023, when the genocide began, when Israeli US supported, US backed genocide of Israel began, my initial thought was, okay, this year nobody's going to tell me to not let the perfect get in the way of the good. because we're not talking about a single issue. We're talking about genocide. We're talking about killing of innocent people. We're talking about now 16,000 to 17,000 children being killed at the end, by bombs manufactured in the US and sent to Israel, most of them. And so here we have people now saying, I was saying this to someone a little bit earlier. Well, only about 10% of the US public puts genocide in the top 10 of their most important issues. Say, really? How does that come about? If that's true, then I feel even I feel I use the word disgust, and I don't it's a strong word, but I'm going to use it because it's the only one that really comes to mind. How could it not be an issue for more of the US populace? And it probably is. I don't trust those polls. I don't know who took them. I don't know how the questions were framed, because we see people in the streets every day, and they've been in the streets every day or every week or every month since a couple days or a couple weeks after October 7th. Okay, and a large segment of the population, someone called it a niche. It's niche groups, huh? Arab Americans, Palestinian Americans, Muslims, young people. We can go on. These are not niche groups. These are people who understand that killing children is a moral atrocity, and that no country, I remember how many times have people said this about Donald Trump in particular? No one is above the law. Well, okay, no individual is above the law, but how about countries? Can we not hold Israel to the same standard that we hold many other countries? If any other country had done this, would the US have just shrugged its shoulders and walked away? I don't think so. But if it's the US and a US ally together, that's what comes of it. That's the US says, well, we're above the law, or the ICC, the International Criminal Court, or the International Court of Justice. They're only designed for Africa and other countries, not for the US and the West. Really? Does that mean the US and the West can't commit war crimes, cannot be involved in international crimes? Of course, we've been for a long time. The US invasion of Iraq, the US invasion of Afghanistan, both of those were outside of the law. So, having said that, I mean, the issue to me, and I think Susan Abu Hawa, who's a Palestinian writer, said it very well at a rally for Jill Stein, a virtual rally for Green Party candidate for President Jill Stein. She said she's not going to crawl over the bodies or the corpses of thousands of Palestinians to get to the poll and vote for either of these two, either Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, because Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, they both support the genocide. And at this point, after 20 plus years, my own 20 plus years in US politics and being told, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good, so many times, this is the year, this is the time that I've been thinking would be the time when people break away from the duopoly, from the uniparty, from the party that takes the big bucks, the AIPAC dollars, that takes pharmaceutical money, that takes money from chemical companies, takes money so to stand in the way of good policy on addressing the climate crisis, and takes money. I mean, look at people who've been defeated in the Democratic primaries because of the influence of AIPAC money, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush. We are being targeted, or not we, but people who have a position that is contrary to what the US wants, or US and Israel together want us to believe. We are being targeted by AIPAC, and others, because that point of view is quote unquote unpopular, but it's the moral position to take. Imagine people arguing with others. You can't vote, you can't use the Holocaust as an issue that you're going to that you'll push to the side because it's letting the perfect get in the way of the good. I'm not comparing these two yet. History will show us. But I'm also seeing that day after day, even after the Democratic National Convention, where Kamala Harris and company did not allow a single Palestinian American voice to be heard from the front of the stage. Immediately after, $20 billion more of weapons were sent to Israel. We're supposed to be voting for Kamala Harris in order to protect democracy, and yet people are not being able to, they're not given the opportunity to speak their minds without serious suppression and repression. And I'm watching this week, right after the conventions, the Democratic National Convention, what's happening in the West Bank. We've been seeing what's been going on in Gaza, and that's been horrific. But I was on the West Bank in 2013. I was in Hebron or Al-Khalil. And I was in the mosque, the Al-Ibrahimi Mosque, which was invaded and raided yesterday or the day before. And that one, 1994, Baruch Goldstein, a doctor from Brooklyn, had gone into the mosque in 1994, shot and killed 29 Muslims while they were praying, and injured 125 others. And what happened? The mosque was shut down, and a couple months later was reopened. Half was a synagogue now, and the other half was still the mosque, but there were cameras everywhere, surveillance cameras everywhere. And now I'm 2024, another, wait a minute, did I say 20 years? It's 30 years, right? 30 years from to 2024. 30 years. All of it is slated to become a Jewish synagogue. And I remember when I was there, there's a tomb that's supposedly Abraham. And it provided a perfect opportunity for unity amongst those religions, because the Jews would worship and Muslims as well. But instead of uniting people, it's now become an issue that's been driving a wedge between the Palestinians, or the Muslims and the Jews. And so anyone who says that this began on October 7th is not really looking carefully at history, because that was 1994. That was the beginning of the first Intifada. That was the closure of Shuhuda Street. Shuhuda Street, which is was the main commercial street for Palestinians. When I was there in 2013, I went with a Palestinian guide down the hill. At the bottom of the hill was another old synagogue, and there was an Israeli with a rifle, or with a gun, I don't know what kind of gun, sitting in the guardhouse. And my guide said, well, he had to go to the left, but if I wanted to, I could walk to the right on Shuhuda Street, because if he walked to the right on Shuhuda Street, that guard in the guardhouse could shoot him. And so for the people who had businesses, it was a thriving thoroughfare. For people who had businesses, In order to go from one side of the of Shahuda Street to the other, first they have to go through a huge checkpoint, very intimidating for, and everyone had to go through it. But then, or that they would also have to go around. It would take them half an hour to 45 minutes to get to the other side of the street because of the checkpoints and the barriers, the apartheid and all that. Instead of just being able to walk down the street, most of the shops are now shuttered and closed. Most of the people who lived above the shops no longer live there. There's an occasional house or building with a Palestinian flag on it, but now, the street signs are in Hebrew. There may be a few in Arabic, mostly they're in Hebrew. And the last thing I will say for the moment, because I know we want to take questions, is that in that tour that this guide gave me, he's become my friend. He has two children, and one of his children, his oldest daughter, inspired a book or a story that I recently wrote. And it is, if you walk through the old city of Hebron or Al-Khalil in Arabic, there's a wire netting across, oh, maybe 8 feet above the street. And that wire netting was constructed by Palestinians because the settlers, the illegal settlers above, were throwing garbage down on their heads. And it was not only garbage, like laundry detergent or soda bottles, it was human wastes as well. And so this wire netting was built to capture everything as it fell. And this, my friend pointed it out to me. I looked up, and sure enough, there were plastic bottles that had been caught by the wire netting. And I spent after that at least 5 years trying to understand how anybody could think it was okay to throw garbage down on the heads of anybody else. And I think, I've gotten my answer through these last 10 or 11 months when we see the attitude of many within the IDF and the IOF and how they take pictures of themselves committing atrocities. One of a Brazilian fellow who blew up a building in Gaza as a gift to his wife or girlfriend back home. He said, "No one else is going to do this." I mean, the lack of human, the dehumanization of people who are Palestinian. Every single one has something that they dreamed of being or dreamed of becoming. I was also in Ramallah, in the refugee camp there, and people were talking about wanting to be attorneys, wanting to be doctors. There's a lot of very, very smart, very dedicated, committed, serious people who live in Palestine. And this attempt to erase them and erase their culture, to me, is very, very disturbing. And to go back to the red line, a vote, and people, some people, many people say, when first, if we just criticize the Democrats, well, why aren't you criticizing Donald Trump and the Republicans? He's going to be worse. He's going to be worse. And I say, and others say, well, how could he be worse? I mean, how are they going to bring all these families and all these children and all these buildings back so he could do it again? I mean, basically, Gaza has been razed to the ground, most parts of it, and continue to be. And then others say, well, are you going to stay home and not vote for anybody? And I say, no, I'm going to go to the polls and vote, and I'm going to cast my vote for Jill Stein and Butch Ware. Oh, but that's just a, no, it's not a protest vote. part of the Green Party philosophy that I always ran on when I ran for office, as you said, Rupe, I was the director of a grassroots environmental organization, and I was also the director of a nonprofit peace organization. And I walked with people who were resisting, who were fighting back. It was not my agenda that the Green Party put forward. It was the people's agenda. It was the activist, in Newark trying to keep a homeless shelter from closing. Okay? It was the immigrant community and their allies at an ICE detention center, also, which happened to be in Newark, because they were trying to close those detention centers down. Okay, but it wasn't me standing out there with a sign. And Jill is the same way. She's gotten herself arrested during this campaign in St. Louis for standing up to end the genocide. So, we're building a movement, and there will be many people who will say, "Well, but where is it? You never, you haven't, it hasn't arrived yet." Well, if you looked in the streets since October, there were huge numbers and continue to be. I know there were huge numbers in New York City on Monday, on Labor Day. The movement is out there and it's growing, and I'll be what word can I use that won't get me censored here? There's no way in the world I will vote for someone who supports genocide. And even after the joy, we have joy in genocide. And then, the stories every day that are coming through, there's no joy in genocide. And there people, I can't believe how many people are still, running to the ambulances, putting, injured people into the ambulances, going as quickly as possible to the decimated healthcare system. The resilience and energy and the determination of Palestinians to survive is so great, and the obstacles thrown their way have been so many. There's no way in hell that I would, oops, there's one of those words, that I would vote for someone who I see as one of their murderers. Think about it, put yourself in your shoes. If you had family members who were killed, and some families have lost 150, minimum 150 members of their families, would anyone ever ask you to vote for the people who murdered your family? I'll leave you there. I'll leave you there. Oh, and I'll just say in New Jersey, one other thing. You have an opportunity no matter where you live, or no matter where you live this time around, to vote for a Green, whether it's for US Congress in any one of the 12 congressional districts, or if or Christina Khalil, who's the US Senate candidate. And then there's Jill Stein, she's on the ballot too. So actually the Green 14 in November. So it's a wasted vote if you throw it away on someone you really don't believe in, and someone who, in my estimation, is a war criminal. So I'll take questions.
Thank you, Madeline. That was I think you've given words to a lot of the rage that a lot of us are feeling. And in some ways also the helplessness with each day there is a new news article of a bomb being dropped and people being killed, and every time you open your feed you see something that makes you wonder where in the world are we and what kind of humanity is on display at the moment. I have a question for you, and for those here, please put your questions in the chat. I will make sure Madeline gets to all of them, if not at least most of them. I want to make sure that we let people go at a time. That's good as well. But I let me kick off here with a question for you, Madeline.
Sure.
And I want to talk specifically about the Democratic Party and their politics. You talked about it a little bit earlier, where you said, vote for, don't look for the perfect candidate, vote for the candidate that's good enough, and that'll get you through for now. And I think the Democratic Party has played this card of, this being the most important election of your lifetime for several years now, right? I mean, if we just, even in the recent past, if you just go back to Clinton and Trump, that card has been played numerous times. And I think that there's only this many times you could play a card like that before people start questioning that why isn't anything being done about this? But the other thing that I'd like to po also point out and get your thoughts on is with each subsequent election, when they have said this is the most important election of our lifetime, the Democratic Party's po policies and platform has consistently moved to the right. In just this past DNC convention, they dropped the capital punishment from their policies. They no longer think capital punishment should be banned, and they're okay with that. What are your thoughts on, the slow moving Democratic Party that's supposed to be of the left and of the working class or the working people, slowly kind of moving to defense and cops and all of this sort of anti-humanity agenda?
That is the question. I had a name for it. I was writing a book about that too, and I didn't finish it, unfortunately, but I may have some additional chapters to add after this election. But I called it ping pong politics, because if the Democrats here and the Republicans here, and it goes this way, that way, this way, that way, the players are the same, right? But as they're playing, everything's moving. It's all moving slowly and slow, more slowly, maybe a little faster to the right. And at some point, while people are deciding between R and D, and they're still playing this game, that whole ping pong table is going to go head over heels off the cliff, bringing everybody with it. And so I couldn't agree with you more on this. And if you, and this is another thing that frustrates me about this year's elections, is that, okay, if immigration is the issue you're concerned about, and lots of people are, people say, well, Trump will be worse. Hold on, take a look at the policies. They're exactly the same. Biden never changed what was put in place, and they've only gotten maybe a little even more severe, with barriers and buoys and such in the river, in Texas, to keep people out. If you really look at what these policies are, unfortunately, you see that they're the same. And yes, Barry posted something here about the Uhuru 3, and they're currently on trial. They're on trial because, in part, because they opposed the U.S. continuing to fund the war in Ukraine. And they wanted to take a step back. And as many of us know, there were many opportunities for the U.S. to negotiate with Russia before, Russia invaded Ukraine. And how is it that people who are pushing for negotiations, for peace, for ceasefire, for freedom of speech, how is it that we're the enemy here? We're the, the whole thing has been turned on its head. So the peacemakers are the ones that, are splitting the votes and a barrier. What kind of democracy do we have left? If I mean I kind of gave people the benefit of the doubt when they were talking about safe, free college tuition, as being something, okay, maybe there's other issues that, are good. I know I haven't voted. Oh, I haven't voted for a Democrat since I did vote for Obama first time, but my eyes were wide open with that. I'm not going to vote for Kamala, that's for sure. But when you look at the impact, what about the forgiveness of student loan debt? What about, the thousands who are homeless? What about universal rent control? I took another look at Jill Stein's platform today. I couldn't finish reading it in an hour. There were point after point after point. There were so many points on things that meant a lot to me, that mean a lot to me. And people are still calling out for Kamala to have her platform up on her website. And apparently she doesn't. Or she didn't as of about a week ago. I don't know about now. That's also part of Nader's idea that the evil becomes greater and the lesser becomes lesser because we don't have policies that are there to put in place to protect working people. Oh, and Biden, for labor. Remember the railroad workers' strike. He put the end to that right away. So there are myths and illusions about political parties and their positions, and then there's the reality. And unfortunately, with all the pomp and circumstance of the convention, very little attention was given to the realities on the economic, financial realities on the ground. And I think that's a problem. It's really hard to argue with people whose heads are in the clouds on joy and genocide. Sorry.
Yeah, the politics of joy, I've just about had it with that.
Okay. Did I answer your question?
yeah, definitely. I think there's, you talked about immigration, and Obama was called by many immigrant right groups as the deporter in chief, actually, because of the amount of people he
Yes.
deported. And I found out this not too long ago, and I was pretty aghast by this, is the wall actually started in his time. It was not something that Trump started. The wall was started by Obama, and it continued during Trump, and it has actually made a lot more progress in Biden's time. So, we've kind of thrown a lot of stuff Trump says out the window, but apparently, there is whatever nonsense he has spewed. Some of it, there is some basis in reality. So, unfortunately, we really need to, I think, as voters, understand what these parties are giving us in terms of promises and platforms and joy and genocide, and vote accordingly. So, it's still hard for many people, right? I've had
Yes.
several conversations. The choices are so stark, and as a recovering Democrat, I understand why there is this hesitation, right, to go vote
Yes.
third party.
Yes.
They want to stick with Kamala Harris. They know the party. They think they know what the party's going to give them, and they obviously know what Trump is going to give them. And I think none of those claims are exaggerated, right? Like, let's not downplay that a second Trump administration would be very, very bad. It would be lethal for the people here. But we're not just talking about us. We understand that the people of Palestine and their livelihood and their humanity ultimately shows us our humanity as well. So that's why we're taking a broader view here. But electorally, in New Jersey, right, I don't want to say it wouldn't matter, but it almost, we have a golden opportunity, I guess, let's put it that way, to make our voice heard. Can you talk a little bit about how that is and why that is?
Yeah, and then I'll also talk about a solution to it for going down the line. But
Please do.
we're not quite ready for it right now, so We can't wait for ranked choice voting to come into play, where you could go to the voting booth no matter where you were in the country, vote for your top choice and your second choice. And so anybody who felt like they were stuck in the middle of this lesser of two evils cage again, would have a way out. Right now, there is no way out of that. But I think what you're getting at for New Jersey, and it's been spoken about for at least since 2018, and probably was being spoken about before then too, but I wasn't involved politically. As I said, I was taking a break from electoral politics. But there's this whole quote unquote swing state strategy. And since New Jersey often votes blue, people say, your vote, you're not going to quote unquote spoil anything because New Jersey votes blue. Well, to that I say that can't spoil something that's already rotten. That was another Ralph Nader line. And I do want to say, Ruby, I think that what Trump, I think, let's put it this way. I think the oligarchs in the White House know what each other is doing. The right hand does know what the left hand is doing. And I think that you got a genocide on the Democratic Party side, and you want to convince people that's still the quote unquote lesser of two evils. You've got to make somebody really, really, really evil on the Republican side. Otherwise, people are not going to vote for the Democrats. And remember, Hillary handpicked Trump back in 2016, and it backfired on her. So I mean, this sounds a little cynical. And I do agree with you that I don't want to downplay people's concerns. But I also think that we are being played. I think the electorate is being played, because both sides of the ping pong table know what their audience is looking for and know what their audience is going to respond to. And I think, us. That we're being played, and I don't want to. I can't tell anyone else how to vote, but I can say that a vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Jill Stein. A vote for Donald Trump is a vote for Donald Trump. A vote for Kamala Harris is a vote for Kamala Harris, and all these other convoluted arguments. I've been hearing those since 1996 and earlier. So yeah, I mean, it's never a good time. It's never a good time, according to the Democrats, to vote for a third party. The Republicans rarely say anything about it. The Libertarians, they don't come down on the Libertarian. We as Greens get that kind of attack all the time. I know there's been a lot of comments in the chat, so I don't know if any were questions, but I think
Yeah,
there's a lot of clarification.
let me address that. And Lily, thank you for correcting me there. So there have been some comments here that the wall actually started many years prior to Obama, and Clinton continued on with it when he signed the NAFTA because they knew that the Mexican economy would deteriorate and people would run up here to come to the United States. There's also an article from Time that Lily has shared, and please make sure you all read it, pass it along. And then Barry said those concerns are very self-centered. They think we will have a better life without Trump, but at the same time, it doesn't matter in the least to those being slaughtered in Gaza, which of the two evils is in here. That is so on point. For people who are losing family and limbs, and everything that they ever held dear. By the second, it really doesn't matter which one is the lesser of the two evils. Yeah, it's really, I sometimes question where we're headed as humans, and it's really hard to find an answer for it. So a very, sort of far-reaching, and again, if anybody has questions, please put them in the chat. I'll continue to ask a couple of questions here to Madeline while I have her attention on me. A very far-reaching sort of a question. What is the future do you envision for, all of this, the conflict, the Green Party? Where do we go as a nation here? You've had tremendous experience in politics and otherwise as well, and obviously seen a lot. I think take us on a tour here a little bit.
Oh wow, that is a far-reaching question, but I think I've learned several things from my travels, and that is that really and truly people just want the same things. They want to be able to have a roof over their head. They want to have food on their table, and they want to be able to walk outside their front door and not worry about a bomb falling on their head. That was the case in Afghanistan, case in Syria, case in certainly in Palestine, in Gaza, the West Bank. I mean, the basic humanity, people who've had owned that land for years and farmed it and had sheep and other animals on there, the olive trees, the olive trees, some of them live to be 3,000 years old, 3,000 years old, and they are very strong and very hardy and very re resilient. And a friend of mine who took me on somewhat of a tour of Tunisia also, he told me he worked in landscaping, and you could take an olive tree from one place and move it to another place, and it will still survive. It's very strong with its roots and everything else. And I think one of the things that is happening with the wars today, and especially with the Gaza genocide, is that people all over the world are coming together to recognize their common humanity, and leave the cops out of this. Leave cop cities out of this. Don't we don't need more cop cities. We don't need more police brutality. We don't need the repression on the university campuses. I was shocked at those people who had protested during the Vietnam War, who said, "Oh, these students don't know they're you know what from their elbows. They don't have any education. They're just out." We have to, I think, and I think these last 11 months are showing people how much we have in common. And if we, I've even found myself becoming stronger in my opinions on things and being able to say to people, "Hey, if you don't want things to change, please just get out of the way of those who do." There are so many people who want to see the same kind of change. And we don't, the naysayers, there have been naysayers forever. But right now, if people don't feel like they can take this stance, don't denigrate those who can, or who want to, who have the courage to do it. Yes, I see from Lily, I can add right now. The IDF has trained police in other parts of the world, including the United States, and even more than that, as someone who is living in Colombia right now, the IDF also was responsible for the founding of a couple paramilitary organizations in Colombia, And people around the world know about some of the violence in Colombia and the assassinations of community leaders, labor leaders, environmental leaders, and so on. Well, two men, former IDF soldiers, were brought into Colombia to train paramilitaries. And they also, Israel sells weapons around the world. So, yeah, we are united by some of these things, that we might not have been aware of 20 years ago or 30 years ago, or some of us might have been, but not so many of us were. At this point in time, we see the connections, and we also see our connections to each other. And I don't know, but that border wall issue that you've been discussing for a while now, tonight, that is really, really key as well. I mean, what kind of fortress do we think, as people in the US, what kind of fortress are we building? Does a fortress hold back anything? No, not really. We can't solve these problems with more violence, more separation, more walls, more barriers. We have to solve these problems by doing something very radical, talking with each other, negotiating with each other. It's such a radical idea, but I'm being sarcastic, obviously. But if you can't talk and you have weapons and you have Raytheons and Boeing, oh yes, Yemen. Remember, Lockheed Martin bombs dropped in Yemen on school children traveling on a school trip in a bus. The US has got to understand. Well, and they won't unless we take actions that pressure them to do so. And at a minimum, how we vote in November is going to show. Well, I mean, we've already seen how eager Democrats are to get Greens away from anything political because they don't want to lose their hold on what they have, nor do the Republicans want to lose their hold. But, the people is where, with the people, is where the answers lie. And somebody said to me today, actually, my running mate for she was my lieutenant governor candidate, running mate when I ran for governor in 2021. She said, "I don't know how you keep doing it. I don't want to be anywhere near politics anymore because politics can be brutal." Well, I'll tell you how I keep doing it is because there are people who are interested and who are working, dedicated, committed every day to creating a better world. And yay, Heather. I won't stop until I'm forced to stop for some, reason other than what I believe and how I feel and how I want to see change occur. I won't stop. And I think there are a lot of people like that. And you know what? I think the youth too, that's why one of the reasons I was so angry at people who were disparaging the student movement. And it wasn't just in the US, it was worldwide. People saying no to genocide all over the world. And that this generation, there's a lot of hope. I have a lot of hope in this generation. Yeah, the only time you truly lose is when you quit. In this generation, we also need to talk across generations. It isn't always the easiest thing to do, because I think some people, there's so many things that have divided us. Whether it's racially or ethnically, or what country we're from, or what religion we believe in, and now there seems to also be the ability to separate based on age, and we have to be very, very careful not to let that happen. I mean, when Occupy started back in 2011, I never went to any of the meetings because I said, if I go, I'll be tempted to talk about my strategies. And 2011 was 14 years, 13 years ago. So I was about 50 at that time. And I said, you know what? I'm going to step away and I'm going to see, let people do their own thing. I don't want to influence. I was told about a year later that I should have gone to those meetings, that there should have been, some communication between generations, experience and inexperience, and together we might have built something different. But I just say that I think there's a lot of false and fake divisions that are between us, been put in between us. And we need to recognize those and overcome those.
That seems like a perfect place to stop. I want to thank you, Madeline, for taking the time this evening, for talking to us, answering questions, and sharing your thoughts. I
My
also want
pleasure.
to take a moment and thank everyone who's joined us today. Thank you for listening to us today. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Instagram at Radio Inquilab. Until next time, Abjo.